Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today I have a special show because I will be starting off the show with an interview with a member of a couple of groups from the South Side of Chicago, a singer named Matthew Perkins, who sang in a couple of groups. One of the groups was called the Twilights, and another of the groups was called the Shadows. So I hope you'll keep tuned for that, because he has a very interesting story, and we'll be telling his history and playing his records, and he even produced some music, which we'll also be playing. So first of all, thanks so much for coming down to the studio.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate you coming down, because you put out some great music, so...
Thank you very much.
Okay. So, first of all, could you talk about, are you originally from Chicago?
No, I'm not.
So, where are you originally from?
I'm from a small town in Mississippi, Starkville, Mississippi.
And how did you originally get involved with music?
Well, in seventh grade through high school, we had groups, and we was influenced by music. Out of Memphis, we're about 170 so miles outside of Memphis, and we'd go south to New Orleans. My father lived down that way, and we'd go down that way to do some things, and we would pick up Randy's Record Mart had shows that would come out of Nashville, had national songs, groups from all over, what kind of music. So
you said you were in Mississippi, and
right.
how'd you hear this music?
Well, we could pick up the AM radio waves, yes, from Nashville and Memphis.
So was it gospel music you were hearing, or secular music you were hearing?
Well, it had primarily all kinds of music, but we was looking for doo-wop music, which was a new sound to us. We was kind of surrounded by country western blues and gospel music.
Okay.
And doo-wop was seeping through to a point, but when we could pick up the stations out of Memphis, Nashville, we could really get into the music.
So doo-wop music was like a new music to you that was exciting for you to hear.
Right. It was exciting, right.
So that was the first music that was kind of inspiring you to get into music.
Not exactly. When I was younger, I used to like the big band sound. You know, even they used to play old Glenn Miller records. I wanted to play a trumpet at one time.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so. Did you ever play an instrument?
No.
Okay.
Not just.
So, but you're saying the first thing that got you into singing doo-wop was hearing the music on AM radio. Is that right?
Right. That's correct.
So, what are some of the first songs you remember, like doo-wop songs you remember really hearing?
Well, you had Clyde McFadder and the Drifters, the early Drifters. And you had the Clovers. It's got a rich history. And there's a group called the Spiders, not probably before your time, but they had some songs you could hear. It was that kind of thing I was sleeping through.
Okay. Well, what do you remember? What Spider song? Like
One called "I Didn't Want to Do It" or something of that nature. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, so you started hearing those songs, and then did you actually start trying to sing those songs?
Well, we would sing, not necessarily that particular one by the Spiders, but there's other doo-wop songs that we would sing. You'd get some, the West Coast, you'd get maybe the Earth Angels, the Penguins, and, you know, any national hit we could get. But when you could get the music from its roots, the songs that were the national, you could get a better feel of the music.
Okay, so then you said we would sing it. Are you saying that you actually formed a group?
Right, I did. Uh-huh.
So were you in high school when you formed a group?
No, seventh grade and through high school.
So what was the name of your group?
The Velvets.
So you formed a group called The Velvets, and did you know how to sing already when you formed the group?
Well, we started singing as kids, you know, and then, yes, we get people that could sing.
And did you
Did
you have to teach yourselves harmony? Did you already know harmony from the church? How did it work?
Well, actually, was around. We had the keyboard, the guy Carol Washington, the one I was telling you about, that sing with the Black Voices from Mississippi State. He was a keyboard, a piano player, and we would get our harmonies from the piano.
Okay.
From an instrument. We get it from an instrument. We learn, and then get it in your heart and mind, and then you'd know.
So basically, because one of the people was, did he sing also?
Yes, he's the lead singer.
So because the lead singer already knew how to play piano, he was able to kind of teach you how to sing harmony.
Teach our voices, right, and keys and songs.
And you emulated the records also. You heard what they did on the records, and you were able to kind of do it with your voices.
Right. We was able to do it, get it in a key that we could handle it and do it.
So, and you sang, were you singing original material or singing the songs you were hearing on the radio?
We did both. We had original material, believe it or not, at that young age, man. We wanted to write. We wanted to be a part of this industry, this business. The music could pick your spirits up, help you through the difficult days and so forth, and challenging times, so... We wanted to be a part of it.
And that was even in the seventh, eighth grade?
Right, yeah.
Okay.
So we did a few shows in the seventh grade.
And that was in Mississippi?
In Mississippi, right.
So what city in Mississippi were you in again?
Starkville.
So what was the city like?
It's a university town. Mississippi State University is there. And so you had a good mix of people from all over. And so forth. And
was it an integrated city?
Or? No, it was segregated at the time I was coming up. Right.
So when you did shows, like, was it mainly for a black audience?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So it was pretty much like for the neighborhood. They watched you perform, and you kind of grew up. You were like community like favorites there.
Right, and we would go out of the neighborhood and perform also. Okay. And you had some exception. You had a radio station, WSSO. And that station would be down, and you have some white singers would come. In fact, one guy wanted to join our group at one time.
Okay.
Yeah, because of the music. The music tends to cross boundaries, you know.
You're saying you actually performed on the radio station?
Yes.
And you were only in the eighth or ninth grade at that time?
Right, around that time, right. They just wanted local talent, that's all.
Okay. How'd you get on the radio station? You just went up there and said...
Well, they had a program called Turntable Spin that you could request certain songs and so forth, and then they wanted to spin that show, and they'd have a little local talent. If you wanted to perform, you could.
Okay, and you're like, we want to get on, and they let you get on.
Right.
And your parents encouraged you with this material?
Well, not necessarily. They want you in school. I was, and so that's how it started, you know.
And then you said you actually went to New Orleans?
Uh-huh.
When did you go to New Orleans?
New Orleans about 1957. That was, you know, about around 10th grade or so, went down. And we wanted to see if we could get something going there.
So did you move there, or your band?
No, my father lived there, and I went down. We would go down and stay with him for a couple of weeks and make whatever contacts we could there. Did a few demo discs and things of that nature.
So you actually cut like a demo in New Orleans?
Right. Yeah.
As the Velvets, is that right?
Right, yeah.
Do you remember the names of the songs?
No, this is time with time. I can't write just recall the name of the song at this time.
But did you have like a band playing on it, or was just you singing?
Just keyboard.
Okay.
Keyboard and acapella, right.
And but you didn't have a record deal or anything, you just cut a demo.
Right.
But nothing happened with it.
Right.
And then you went back to Mississippi.
Right.
And then did you graduate high school in Mississippi?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
And so how long did you continue with your group, The Velvets?
Well, I think so about... Maybe the senior year, I don't recall doing anything with the Velvets. I was also involved in sports, so that would take a little time. And after that, Carol Washington, the lead singer, was into gospel music. He went in that direction, and one of the Velvet other lead singers went to St. Louis. And I moved to Chicago.
So did you move to Chicago right after high school?
Right after high school, yes.
What prompted you to move to Chicago?
Well, my mother was here, and I used to come up during the summer months sometime when I was in school, visit her, and Cicero Blake was a friend of the families, and, you know, my mother lived in one end of the building, and Cicero Blake, his family, and mother lived in another end. So he, I think, was during that time replacing D. Clark with the Cool Gents.
Okay.
And I would, you know, talk to anybody I could about music, you know, to learn this, try and get hold to the sound that they were trying to bring forth.
So actually, when you were in high school, you said your dad was living in New Orleans and your mom was living in Chicago.
Right, and I was raised by my grandmother.
Oh, okay, that's what I didn't understand.
Okay.
So then you moved to Chicago, and did you move in with your mom or you moved in by yourself somewhere?
No, when I came to Chicago, I was married, and so I had my own place, an apartment, and for about a year and a half or two, we lived in Oakdale Gardens.
Which is the housing just at the southern border of Chicago, right?
That's correct.
And where a lot of famous Chicago talent came out of, right?
Right.
And the most famous, one of the most famous original Chicago doo-wop groups at the time there was the Debonairs, right?
I believe so.
Did you know the Debonairs?
No, I didn't. I didn't know any of the groups at that time. I met John Staples, which was with the Four Gents. He was a neighbor. And that's how I managed to meet some of the other groups through him.
So, and that was Eddie Sullivan's group, the Four Gents?
Right.
And so were they together at that time singing?
I'm not sure. I know that John had a song out called Lender.
Yeah.
And he claimed the critics panned the song because of, you know, arrangement, so many just repeating the word Linda all through the song. That's what he told me. But, John would introduce me to Wayman Bryan and Lewis Pritchett, you know, the other two members of the Gents. And they was about to try and get something going. What I wanted to do was record.
Okay.
Record out. Period.
Because you hadn't done that yet.
No, that was a dream-like, you know, childhood dream.
Okay.
Record out.
So, So it was your goal to form a group at that time?
Right. I wanted to get into a group that was being established, not an established group, because it's difficult. They got a circle and a network of singers and musicians they work with. And you got a group just establishing itself. It's a new thing. I was looking for something new. You know, we wanted to try and have some kind of input into the business. Put our own sound in. You get into a established group, they got the sound, they got the plans and purpose and vision. And so this was a thing when Lewis would introduce us and Wayman would introduce me to Kevin, and Kevin would come in the group and we formed the Twilights.
Okay, so who was Calvin?
Calvin Barron was a talented writer, singer, he sang with Morocco's, this jazz group he did with
Sun Ra.
Sun Ra, right.
The Cosmic Rays.
Cosmic Rays, right. And he's very talented. He could write, arrange, sing, network of musicians, some of the top musicians in the city, you know. And he kept his contact with the groups that he worked with before. And so he was kind of like what we would like to work with, you know, try and get things going with him.
So you were together with some ex-members of the Four Gents, and then you hooked up with Calvin.
Right.
How did you hook up with Calvin?
Well, the two guys from the Gents knew Calvin and had been talking to him. They were talking about doing a record together. And I think it was Brian and Pritchett.
So you said originally you knew three guys from the Four Gents, is that right?
Well, because John Staples sang with them one time himself, he said.
So, but John Staples, he ended up not becoming a part of your group?
No, he didn't, no.
Okay, so why didn't he become a part of your group? It just didn't click?
I don't think so. It probably had other plans.
Okay.
So, you know, you got different visions and plans and...
So you met three of the Four Gents, and then two of them ended up being a part of your group.
With the Twilights, right.
So the two that ended up being a part of your group were, what was Lewis Pritchard?
Uh-huh.
And then what was the other one?
You had Pritchard and Bryant, Wayman Bryant.
So Lewis Pritchard and Wayman Bryant.
Right.
And then which one of them knew Calvin?
Both. They introduced me to Calvin, Pritchard and Bryant.
And... So Lewis and Wayman both lived in the Gardens, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because the Four Gents were a Gardens group, but Calvin didn't live in the Gardens, is that right?
No, Calvin lived in Englewood.
Okay, so he lived like around what streets did you know?
64th and Morgan.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And how come he wasn't singing in a group at the time?
No, not at the time. He wanted to do his own thing. If he would work with Morocco's, George and Mario, the leaders of Morocco, they had their sound they wanted out there. Calvin had wanted to get a sound out. He didn't want to imitate anybody. He admired the Flamingos and a fan of Nate Nelson, the lead singer. But Calvin would not do any of the Flamingos songs.
Okay. So in any group, was he always the lead singer of the group?
I really don't know about the Morocco's.
Okay.
I don't know. But when I met him after that, he was the lead singer all the time.
Okay, so you had gotten four guys together at that point. What year was that?
That was we was at Impact Records in 1963, so that had to be closing in on it, 1963, somewhere around there.
Well, did you get a record deal right away?
No, what happened with the record deal with Impact Records is that Calvin introduced me to Leonard Allen, the legendary record man from United Records and States. And you're familiar with Allen's work.
He ran, that's the label that the Morocco's were on.
Right.
Right.
Right. Now, and Calvin would introduce me to the people in the business end and also the musicians and so. So Leonard Allen was out of the business at that time. And he would introduce us to George and Ernie Lena down at Impact Records.
But how long had the group been together before he hooked you up with them, though?
It was just beginning. The group was just beginning.
So right away he was hooking you up with record
deals. Right, because we was together to record if we wanted to.
So you weren't even rehearsing for a long time. Right away you got together, you clicked, you're like, we're going to record.
That's what we wanted to do. Yeah.
Okay. So he hooked you up with Leonard Allen.
Right.
And you said Leonard Allen, who you said ran United Records.
Right.
And Leonard Allen hooked you up with George and Ernie Lehner.
Right.
And you said that was around 62, 63?
63, I believe we recorded the first two songs for them.
Okay. So the first two songs you ended up recording for them, so first of all, there's a weird history with one ended up being released. So first of all, let me ask, how did you come up with the name, who came up with the name The Twilights?
I kind of believe it was Bryant and Calvin. I'm not sure. But we all, seemed to agree it was a name that we could work with.
Okay. Okay, well, how about I'll play the record because we've been talking for a while, and then we could talk a little bit more.
That'd be great.
So, it's a weird story about what actually got released because I'm not even 100% sure, but I know that they released at least one record on you under the name The Twilights. I think this is the A side of the record. This is a really nice song. This is The Twilights, and this track is called No Greater Thing Than Love.
Well, then you know that.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just The Twilights with No Greater Thing Than Love. And if you're just tuning in, I have Matthew Perkins, member of The Twilights, in the studio right now telling the story of his group that came out on MPAC Records in 1963, around that time. Is that right?
That's correct.
So we were just talking about how that group was formed out of the remnants of the Four Gents out of Altgeld Gardens, plus singing lead on it was Calvin Barron, who had previously sung with the Moroccos and the Cosmic Rays. So he sings lead. Who sings the other parts on the record?
You got Bryant Pritchett, okay, and myself.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's just four guys singing on it.
Right, Calvin preferred five-part harmony in arrangement, so he'd bring a guy in. I think James Baker could have been on this record also.
Who was James Baker?
James Baker would eventually become a member of the Shadows.
Okay, so he was in the later group that you were in.
Right, but I believe he was on this recording also.
Okay, so how did you know him? He was just a friend of Calvin?
Well, no, he was a friend of Bryant Pritchett. He lived out in Altgeld Gardens also.
Okay, so... So he was just, but did he sing in any other groups before, too?
Well, I met him just, you know, at this particular time. I didn't, he just sung in local groups. I didn't know established group that he mentioned anything of that nature. But he was a good singer, had a tremendous ear for music and arranging.
Okay.
He was talented.
So you think there's a fifth voice on that record?
I'm sure it is. Calvin preferred five-part harmony.
Okay, so there's a James Baker on that record
right,
also.
Right.
Who later was in the Shadows then.
Right.
Okay, so pretty much then that group was almost the same group as the Shadows since there were three common members.
That's true.
Okay, so, there weren't three common, well... Well, we'll get into the different lineup changes.
Right.
So one thing that's weird about that record is, MPAC Records pressed it, but they didn't really promote it or distribute it. Is that right?
That's correct. Well, we tried to get Andre to release that record, and he didn't release it. He said he would, but he didn't. Not during the time we tried to get him to release it.
You said Andre. You mean Andre Williams?
Right.
Because was he working as like an A&R guy?
Down Impact, yes.
Like a promotions guy?
Right. He would put together the musicians and the particular arrangement that he thought the song should have, along with Calvin's input. And this Charles Oreo out of New York was a good friend of Calvin. In some way, he ended up owning part of the song. I don't know.
Yeah, I was showing you the record label, and there's a C, Oreo.
Yeah.
So who's Charles Oreo?
Charles Oreo is an agent out of New York City and is a friend of Calvin. And he would come, when he would come through Chicago, he would come out in Inglewood to visit Calvin and listen to his songs. So, you check his history in the early days of Bobby Darin. I believe he had something to do with his career in the early days, the beginning days.
So maybe Calvin thought that he would somehow help promote the song and make it a hit or something like that?
More than likely he would have if they had released it.
Okay, so you think it was just pressed and not distributed?
I don't, but it's not during the time that we was promised that it would be released, no.
Okay.
I believe it was released later after Calvin and the Twilights did Moments Like This. Moments Like This was getting so much airplay in the city. And I noticed they also would put featured Calvin as a vocalist on that Impact record, as a lead vocalist on the side, if you noticed that.
Yeah, it says featuring Calvin Barron on it.
Right.
Okay.
Because Moments Like This was taken off.
So you think that they released it later? Because one thing that makes the story even weirder is that in the official, published catalog of MPAC Records, on the same label number, they don't list, apparently some British person, I asked about this on the internet, and some British person told me that MPAC Records released their official catalog, and they left off the Twilights record entirely,
mm-hmm.
and instead they listed a record by the Rainbows. And the record by the Rainbows has one song called Come Rain, Come Shine, and then the B-side was called No Greater Thing Than Love. And I don't know, I don't know anybody who owns the Rainbows record. So, but it does list No Greater Thing Than Love also. Could you talk a little bit about that? Do you remember a record by the Rainbows? Did you guys ever have the name Rainbows or record a song called Come Rain, Come Shine?
We recorded the song, but there was a project that Andre was doing, so we just recorded it for him. The song he wanted recorded.
Okay.
He asked us to record it.
Okay, so you don't know if they released a record by the Rainbows or not, because I'm not sure if that record exists or not.
I don't know, but...
And you were telling me that, do you remember anything about the song Come Rain, Come Shine?
Yes.
What do you remember about the song?
Well, Andre would compete with Motown, because he had a problem, some kind of problem, clash, personality clash. And he would go in the sound room and study anything Motown would release. And so this song had something to do with compete with something that Motown released, like he did Shake a Tail Feather to compete with Do You Want to Dance. He would study, not copy their song, but study it and get something along the same lines, trying to overshadow it. That's what he would do.
So what was it? You're saying it was an answer record?
Well, not an answer record. He wanted to compete with Motown. I think he wanted to make Impact Records another Motown.
So what was Come Rain, Come Shine competing with?
Well, it was the group that did the song Soulja Boy. Now, I don't know. They... This girl group?
Were you saying the Shirelles?
I believe so. So that's what that song was.
But that wasn't that wasn't Motown.
No, I know it wasn't Motown, but that's
okay.
The song he wanted to copy.
Okay.
But if you listen to the song, if you ever listen to it and compare the two, you see a similarity.
I can't listen to it if it wasn't released.
Okay.
Maybe it was released, but definitely there's some kind of mystery around the release of your records because they're so rare. And you were saying just now that you thought that record I just played might have even been released after the other record.
After Cabin in the Twilight.
So yeah, so it's definitely some weird... And what's weird is both records have the same labeled catalog number.
Uh-huh.
So they did something funny with your records, for sure.
Well, that's the business that time.
Okay. So, so either way... Either the Rainbow Records, what Rainbows Records, and you don't know who came up with the name the Rainbows, do you?
I believe it was Andre.
Okay. That's not a very masculine name either.
No.
So either way, your MPAC records, whichever ones were released, didn't get much play. Did you record more material at MPAC that wasn't released?
I believe so, but some... Over and Over Again that Kevin did and we like. It's been a while, but I think it's more. It's something out there still on tape, I'm sure.
Okay. Yeah, I know that they recorded tons of material at Wonderful Records that was just unreleased on
right.
A lot of their artists.
Right.
That they have on tape. So you just made reference in the conversation to a second record by Calvin and the Twilights, and the record was Moments Like This and Bashful Boy, both of which are great songs, so hopefully we have time to play both of them. So what's the story with that record, and how much longer after the first record did that come out?
Well, that was shortly after that, after we couldn't get it going with... Impact Records. We wanted to independently produce something ourselves.
Okay.
We wanted to have some kind of creative control of the masters and so forth. So Kevin was working on Moments Like This. He'd work on that song. And so he was always working on some song. And great melodies and so forth. And he would look to me for the lyrics. So we worked together and... I was just like working with him. He liked working with me.
Okay.
And so we'd work on this, and he'd have the melody arrangement all in his head.
What year do you think that came out?
That was about, say, maybe a year and a half after Impact, somewhere in there.
So 64, 65.
So right in there, yes. I'm guessing. I can get a time frame for you, but not right off the top of my head.
No. I mean, it's hard with stuff like that to pinpoint an exact
year.
Yeah, right. So with that record, Did the group lineup change at all?
Yes, in Cabin in Twilight, we had Ezell Williams, which was just a friend of Miller the Shepherd and had stayed some with the Shepherds at one point in time. And Harvey Pete Walker, the nickname Pete, that sung with the Cosmic Rays in Calvin, you know, jazz type singer. And Calvin and myself. And that was primarily what the new Twilight would be like.
So who left the group?
Pritchard and Bryant, they left. After Impact, they left the group. We split. Calvin and I went one way, Pritchard and Bryant went the other.
So the two guys from the four gents left the group?
Right. We just parted ways, yes. No, it was nothing like a dispute or breakup. I think the whole of that Impact Records kind of put a little damp on things for a while.
It kind of makes sense because it's not like you were some group that was performing together for years anyway.
Right. We just got together to record. You
know? And then the recording didn't work out anyway.
Right, so we moved on.
Yeah. So you worked on a new recording, and the new lineup of the group was you, Calvin, and then there were two more guys you just mentioned.
Yeah, Ezell Williams and Harvey Walker.
So Ezell Williams, you said, was friends. He was somehow connected to the Shepherds.
Right.
And Harvey Walker, you said, was
Cosmic Rays. Yeah.
Was connected to the Cosmic Rays. So that's four guys total. Was there a fifth member?
Maybe in the studio, but see, when you bring the people in for a certain sound, a certain session, but that was the basic of the group. The picture that I'm talking about in question, those are the four guys that are on the picture.
Okay, so you said usually there were five people, but in that
picture. In the studio.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so you had a picture, so you said you had a publicity photo taken, and it was of the Harlow group.
Right, it was Ezell, Harvey, and Kevin, and myself.
Okay, so you ended up recording Moments Like This and Bashful Boy.
Right.
And on the you keep saying Moments Like This was the A side of the record. That was the side that got played.
Right.
On the record, it's marked as the B side, though. Okay. So did you intend that to be the A side the whole time? Or did the DJ slip it over?
Well, after this session, I think it was William Crane, Bill Butterball Crane, a DJ that was pretty popular.
Yeah.
He liked that side, you know, and he was playing it quite, sometimes four times an hour and so forth. And Moments Like This caught on.
Okay.
Yeah, it did. And so you pushed aside to move.
So Butterball broke the record for you.
Right.
So getting back to the record, though, what's the story of the record? Like, how did, you guys decided to produce the records yourselves?
Right.
So did you guys pay for the studio time and
right.
produce it yourselves?
Right, down at Sound Studio.
And so did you pay for all the musicians and stuff, too? And did you write the songs yourselves?
Calvin was writing, yeah.
And whose record label was Harlow Records?
Harlow was a local independent label on the south side, and they had an office down at Wacker Drive. Freeman, I think it was Hal Freeman, if I'm not sure, that was the owner of that label. And what happened is that the record would take off, and a small company wasn't able to keep up with the demand at the time.
Okay, so everyone wanted to buy it, but they couldn't supply
it. Supply it to a point, yeah.
Okay, well, let me play Moments Like This, and then we could talk some more. Hopefully I'll get time to play both sides in the interview.
Okay.
So this is Calvin and the Twilight. So this was your, is this safe to say, the biggest hit of your career?
I would say between that and the No Other Love.
Okay, well, this is Calvin and the Twilights with Moments Like This.
Moments like this. Yeah. what do I see? My heart's filled with a song. Let me sing forevermore.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just Calvin and the Twilights with Moments Like This. That was a really nice record. And the other side is really nice, too. It's called Bashful Boy, which hopefully we'll have time to play. We were just talking about how that side actually got broken by Butterball Crane. So was he like a personal friend of the group, or did he just like the record? Did he just pick up on the record himself?
He was a friend, you know. Kevin and I, we would just hang out with him at times.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a good friend.
So did the record, like, how long did it get played in Chicago?
I can't say. It was played a decent period of time.
So the group originally had formed as a studio group. Did you actually start to do shows based on the record after that, after it got played?
Yeah, we did shows, yeah.
So, do you remember some of the places you did shows?
Well, you know, it was clubs up from 63rd on the west side out all the way out east. It was clubs all over. It was social clubs. It was political events that people would rent halls, ballrooms, and so forth. And it's plenty of work.
And what types of songs, like what types of stuff did you do at your shows?
Well, the Twilights, Kevin would do his own arrangements on whatever songs he'd do. He would want a style on it. He didn't want to sing, imitate anybody. He wanted his own sound out there.
So what was his sound?
Well, he would take songs like pop songs and put a kind of jazz twist to them. He would do September songs, Stardust, and some of the current sounds that out there. He put his own arrangement to them.
So what was he into, like modern harmony, like that type of sound? You're saying?
He could do almost any kind of a pop sound. He would put a jazz lean on a lot of his stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was that just like because of his background in the cosmic rays, or that was just his style?
I think that's the music that he really loved.
Okay.
That's what he wanted out there.
He just liked like a jazzy kind of style.
Right. He was, like I say, was a fan of Nate Nelson of Flamingos.
Okay.
He loved Nate's style of singing.
Did you guys like that sound too?
Well, yes. Okay. His work was fascinating because he was a creative genius. He could kind of come up with sounds that really you didn't know exist, in a sense. You didn't think he could. And it was a thing where you'd be fascinated by his arrangements.
Okay.
He'd take a simple song and could arrange it. He probably could arrange Old MacDonald Had a Farm and make it sound good. Maybe no commercial value, but he could do that. Yeah.
So, and it must have been unusual working with him because you didn't have a history, really, because like you guys had just come together to record, and you hadn't been together for many years, kind
right.
of practicing in the basement.
Right.
So, did you guys practice regularly at that point?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
So, how often were you practicing?
Almost daily.
Okay.
At Kevin's place, yeah.
And you must have been working a regular job at
right,
that point
that's
too.
Right. That's true. Right.
So after work, you'd come and practice at Kevin's
right.
place.
Very Nick Callen at both ends. Right.
Okay. And did you guys must have had to get suits and stuff for your shows
right.
and stuff too?
Yes,
okay.
Yeah.
So, and then after that record, if that record did get some play in Chicago, did you try to seek out any other recording deals or anything like that?
Well, after that, after moments like this to, I think that we didn't move into another recording kind of agreement with the group. And Calvin was kind of getting a bit disgruntled with the industry the way it was treated from the first Twilight Records until this, getting tied up with a small label. And
just because he didn't manage to be successful.
He just thought that one of these should be a breakthrough for him to get his work out there. He never was able to get his work out like it should have been.
Yeah, I mean, that's the experience with a lot of people is just they get bitter because they're unable to become successful because there's so much talent, but so few breaks.
Right. Well, I don't think it was the other talent out. Most people you run into with talent would try and, in fact, pull for you. They would, if they could give you any advice, any direction to help you, it wasn't a competition-like thing. Except on stage when you have groups going against each other for some kind of thing, reason or another. But it was kind of like a family almost. They wanted to see you bring your best out. They wasn't concerned because you were singing different styles, so you wouldn't be competition to an artist. Because you got your style and he's got his style.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, like, I've seen, like, a lot of people just never got the breaks that they deserve. Because,
I agree.
You know, it's just hard. There was just so much good music out there, but
right.
So few breaks, you
yes,
know.
Yes.
So what happened to the group? Disband after a while?
After a while, we moved and organized the Shadows.
Okay, so out of the remnants of the Twilights?
Right.
So how many... So, what years would you say the Twilights kind of broke up and the Shadows formed?
Well, the Twilights, I probably last maybe 2.5 years, something of that nature. And then the Shadows were formed.
Okay, so, like, around what year would you say the Shadows formed?
If I want to just take a round figure, I'd say maybe around 67, 68, somewhere in there.
Okay. So, what was the lineup of the Shadows?
Shadows was Henry Edwards, James Baker, the gentleman from the Garden, Roy Murray, and Julius Collins.
So that's Henry Edwards,
uh-huh.
Roy Murray, Julius Collins,
and James Baker, and myself.
So, I'm pretty much only seeing... I'm not seeing any common members. Who are the common members from that last Calvin and the Twilight?
Roy Murray was with the latter parts of the Twilight.
So he had joined after you recorded Moments.
Yeah, recorded Moments Like This, yeah.
So pretty much he's the only kind of continuity between the Twilights, in addition to the James Baker that was on the very first record.
Right, and yeah, right. Baker did get a chance to work with Calvin a little bit also before he left.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, what happened to the other members of the Twilights?
Ethel and Harvey. Well, after the recording, it wasn't that much interest. You know, you have to understand the groups in our circles. When the lean times, you'll find guys drifting away, or they drift away from the direction of the group, or the focus of the group, the type of music. And you would have the base, the foundation of the group that would remain. Unless you was established and had something going and income coming in steady, you'd have a turnover on some parts of the group.
Okay.
So, you know, a couple of guys maybe. But so the foundational guys would be there. The guys that really would see the vision and want to fight it too.
Okay. So... Pretty much, the Collins. What was his first name?
Julius
Collins.
Uh-huh.
He was in the last version of the Twilights.
Baker and Murray was in the last.
Sorry, Murray.
Right. Collins came from it. He had worked with the Pastels.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
Collins was a popular. He's a popular singer. He worked as a single artist. Or worked with groups. Everybody knew he was one of the best lead singers around. He could sing anything, and he could sing as a single artist. He could work with a group.
Okay.
And but he liked kind of the he liked the nightlife a bit, and he wasn't just wholeheartedly staying in one group.
So how did you form the Shadows?
Well, I formed the Shadows because I had this song, No Other Love, and it actually I had during the twilight, and nobody would get the song. They didn't see it as what I was trying to show out of the song, you know. So I couldn't get anybody to sing the song in twilight. So it's not that they didn't want to. It wasn't a thing of not just singing it, but if they can't feel it, live it, it become a part of you. You have to be. We believe that you should be. The song should come from your heart,
okay,
from your innermost being, from the depth of you. If you can't do that, then really you're not going to reach the audience.
Okay.
And nobody could see No Other Love, the arrangement and the sound or the lyrics, as a song that could be recorded. And so after we found the Shadows, that's when we recorded the song.
So it didn't fit with the guise of the Twilight.
Well, it didn't see it in the first part of the Shadows didn't at first.
So how did you find and form the Shadows? Did you form the group?
Right. Uh-huh.
So you already knew James Baker, and you already knew Roy Murray.
Right.
So you pulled them along with you?
Right. They came along. They wanted to go, yeah.
And then the guy from the Pastels was Julius Collins.
Right.
How did you know him?
Okay. Well, we just knew Julius from being a great singer. I can give you a story about that song. We first recorded, Roy Murray did the lead on it. He did the lead on it, and he sounded okay. He sounded pretty good. But he didn't get what we was looking for in the song, what I was looking for in the first place. And so Roy was a dear friend of mine. But I had to say, Roy, I'm going to bring this. I took the song to Julius. Julius liked the song. So we got to go back in the studio and do the track over again. He was disappointed about that, kind of aggravated. And it was a tough thing to do, but, man, you have to put your best effort out there.
So you originally were four members, and you brought in a fifth guy just for that song. To make the song better, you're saying?
To get the type of lead we wanted out of the song.
Okay.
Yeah, to get Julius and then get the type of lead. And Julius liked the song off the top. And we had already, I talked to Leonard Allen about it earlier, about, you know, a label to put it on, to record it. And Leonard Allen would have this Golden Sound record. This is, I don't know where this label came from, but apparently, I believe he probably would put some of his stuff from United on there, old record from United on a label like that. But he would give, he liked that No Other Love also. In fact, he'd go in the studio with Donna Sound to mix that song. And he would work with me on that. That's one of his last projects.
So he kind of revived, he went back, so he had done United and done all this old material, and he kind of went back into the record industry just to do your record, pretty much. Because as a favor to you, or because he liked your music?
Well, both, because we hit it off. Leonard Allen and I were great friends. I would try and talk to him 3-4 times a week, meet with him and so forth, listen to the fascinating stories about the business, the early days of the business. And he was a great friend of mine.
Okay, well, let me play the record and we can talk some more.
Okay.
So this is The Shadows with the one record they released initially on Leonard Allen's Golden Sound record label. And this track is called No Other Love.
Oh,
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. If you're just tuning in, I am doing an interview with a member of the groups Calvin and the Twilights and the Shadows. That was just the Shadows with their record No Other Love, which got released initially on Leonard Allen's Golden Sound record label. So did that record get play in Chicago?
Excellent play.
Okay.
That's how it moved to USA, USA label.
So USA Records picked up the record.
Right.
So do you know if it got, so you guys had produced the record yourselves.
Right.
And did you guys broker the deal with USA? They're like, we want to pick it up for national distribution.
Okay, Alonzo King was working at the time at USA as a major distributor here in the Midwest and nationally, you know. He liked the record. Now the problem with the record is that I'd made a verbal commitment to another powerful radio personality, I won't mention his name, to pick the record up. And then when USA Records wanted it, Alonzo wanted it, and I knew he could break this record nationally because it was just moving like that, otherwise it wouldn't go to another label. The Golden Sound would have been sufficient.
Okay.
But now it's going to a label that can push the record across the nation. And then that was a hindrance there. That was a slowdown there because of that agreement I had made.
So, but what was, you're saying the other DJ wanted to put it out on another label?
Well, if USA would control it, he wouldn't have a part in it then. I didn't have it was just a verbal commitment we were
supposed
to make.
But what did the other DJ want to do with it?
He wanted to put it out, right. He wanted to.
On a different label.
Right, yes.
And then he would get a cut of it somehow.
Right. Yes.
Okay. But, so basically, you kind of got screwed because two people wanted a cut of it.
Right. Well, it was maybe myself, the decision I made to try to deal with this thing. So I take credit for this, slowing it down, but it was a big record. It was moving.
But now, I don't know if you know this, but the record is actually really collectible overseas for the B-side because in England they got this thing called Northern Soul where they like to play collectible 60s records, and they like up-tempo 60s records that they can dance to.
Yeah.
So, like here in the U.S., we like the ballad sides, like the No Other Love sides that you could like slow dance to. But they like to play songs where they could like play in their clubs and dance to. So the other side, My Love Has Gone, is kind of a collectible and expensive record in the U.K. right now.
Yes, my daughter-in-law mentioned that. She was the one that filled me in, uncovered my past, you know.
So you actually have like an expensive record on, and on both labels, it's worth money now in England.
That's great to know.
So let me play the other side, because both sides of the record are great, and then we could talk some more.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about what you've done since The Shadows.
Okay.
So this is the other side, and this side didn't get any play in Chicago, right? This is called My Love Has Gone. They didn't flip it over, did they?
No.
Okay, but either way, this is the side that they if you went to the UK and you were in a club and someone played your record, they'd be playing this side. So this side is called My Love Has Gone.
I'm
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. That was just The Shadows with My Love Has Gone. And that was just the B-side of their local hit, No Other Love. And if you are just tuning in, I have a member of The Shadows and of Calvin and the Twilights, Matthew Perkins, here in the studio talking about his story. So what year did that record come out again?
I would say around 68.
Okay.
Yes.
And we were just talking about how that record, it came out on Leonard Allen's Golden Sound label and then got picked up for national distribution on the USA label. But because of some weird conflicts, it didn't get as well distributed as it could have been.
You're correct.
So, one thing I forgot to ask is, so who sings lead on No Other Love?
Henry Edwards.
And who's singing all the other parts?
Well, you got the regular, the guys that, Judith Collins and Baker and Murray and myself, the background.
Okay. And then who sings lead on My Love Is Gone?
Henry Edwards sings lead on My Love Is Gone. Judith Collins sings No Other Love.
Okay. Okay, and then, so how long did The Shadows stay together?
Shadows stayed together about 3 years.
Okay, so about 3 years after that record?
After that, right, yes.
Uh-huh. And did you guys do shows?
Did shows, right.
And what were your shows like?
Well, our shows are different. We would do like a variety show. You know, we'd bring in dancers, and it would just promote shows. We'd just have a variety. Yeah.
I imagine it must have been much different than the shows with Calvin, like especially
right,
the style of music was changing and getting psychedelic,
right,
too.
Music was changing. Disco was around the corner, so... things was changing pretty fast.
So, like, did you get funkier? What types of songs did you do in your shows?
Well, this group was versatile. Henry Edwards could do the kind of lead like that. Maybe some would call a church sound, a lead like Benny King type material, or David Ruffin of the Temptation, and Julius Collins could do it all. So you had some lead singers that could really work an audience once they find out the direction that the show should go. So we had, it was a group that was very popular in demand.
So you were a popular local group?
Right, but we didn't try and record after that.
So first of all, how many days a week were you working?
Weekends primarily, you know. The work would be like Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You know,
what were the main clubs you were working at?
Well, it's the place called Star Show Lounge, Southside. There's so many clubs so long ago. Clubs are not in existence now. And I'd have to try and jog my memory to get you that.
Okay.
And I couldn't do it in this short time period.
And, but your show, and did you have a backing band too, or you just play with the house bands at the clubs?
No, we had our band. We take our musicians, yeah.
How'd you get a backing band?
Rhythm section. You just got rhythm section, keyboard, guitar, and that's all we needed.
Did your band have a name, or was it just The Shadows also?
The Shadows.
Okay.
They back us, yeah.
How come you never tried to record again?
Well, I don't know. I can't say. First of all, I think the problem is a shortage of material. Having material that you think you can go in the studio with, that would sell. It'd be commercial and with some quality to it. It was no shortage of talent, but shortage of writers and arrangers. And so you didn't have the material that you would feel comfortable in going to the studio doing.
So you're saying you didn't have material that you wrote to record left over? Like you weren't writing new material for yourselves, you're saying?
No, not that.
Okay. So you pretty much never recorded it. You don't have any unreleased Shadow stuff. You never recorded any more stuff, pretty much.
No, that's it.
Okay. And so you were together for a few more years, did some club work,
right,
and then you drifted apart after a while.
Right.
So probably around 73, 74, the group broke up.
Yeah, the group broke up right in that time, somewhere in there. Or maybe earlier.
Do you know if any of the other group members went on to sing in any other groups?
Well, I don't know offhand, no. I can't say what they're doing. I was out of the business for a short period of time. I wanted to go back into the end of managing and producing records. I'd learned from Leonard Allen and Alonzo King. I wanted to put it to work, some of that. And I thought I could help develop some local talent. So I wanted to go in that direction, and later on I wanted my own label.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, can you talk about some of the groups that you managed or produced?
Well, I did Force of Music Farm, and we did that at a Timber Studio, Jerry Mazika. They had writers there, husband and wife team, Bill and Maureen Turner, and Jerry Flowers. They were writers, and I thought they would have the pulse of what was happening in the business at that time, the change. Thought they would have that be able to reach the audience that was out there.
So who were the Force of Music? Were they a band?
They was a band. They play and sing, and they had two vocalists that was just Maureen Turner and Wellaine, just vocalists, the ladies in the group.
And were they from Chicago?
Right, Chicago and Peoria.
And how did you come across them?
Well, there was a drummer, Ben, that was with another group that we talked about managing in the past, and they were looking for a manager, and Ben was telling me about it.
What was Ben's other group?
I can't say offhand. I don't remember the name of the group. Pretty popular. I had a good bass player with that group. That, in fact, I think he ended up with Coco Taylor at one time, the bass player.
Okay.
Yeah. But Ben was looking for a manager, and they decided they wanted me to manage them. Then again, I wanted to record, you know.
So Ben was in another group, and then he became part of the Force of Music.
Force of Music, right. Mm-hmm.
And then, so the Force of Music was looking for a manager and a producer, and you became their manager and producer.
They were primarily looking for a manager, an agent. They didn't think I wanted to record them.
So you became their manager, but you became their producer also.
Right.
And you ended up recording them, and what year did you end up recording them? Do you remember?
I believe it was in the early 70s at Timory Studio.
Early 80s?
Well, that's what I'm trying to say, yeah.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Let's see.
The record got released late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, so the record was released a long time after I recorded it. The record wasn't released during the time we recorded it. That record was on the shelf a while.
But it definitely has a late 70s sound.
Right, well.
It definitely wasn't recorded in the early 70s.
You know, I'm going...
It's got synthesizers in it, on it and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm going by my memory the best that I can on this stuff, for the timeline.
Okay.
Yes.
But that studio was... Okay, well, either way, it you recorded it, and the tracks were called Feel Your Love and Trying to Trap Your Heart.
Right.
And so you produced the record, and you recorded it at that studio, and it got released on the Four Brothers record label.
Right.
And do you remember who ran that record label?
No, I had an agreement with the Four Brothers, but that's a while back. I don't get the paperwork at home, but I don't have it with me.
Okay. So let me play. The record has two good sides. Let me play the ballad side, which is called Trying to Trap Your Heart, and we can talk some more.
Right, yeah.
So this is the Force of Music, which you produced and was released sometime in the late 70s, early 80s.
Right.
And this is called Trying to Trap Your Heart. It's a nice ballad.
Give me your love. Everything's right, baby. Nothing's wrong. Whoa!
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. If you're just tuning in, I am doing an interview with a singer named Matthew Perkins, who sang in the group The Twilights and the Shadows. That last record I just played was a group called The Force of Music, which he managed and produced. That record came out sometime in the late 70s, although it was recorded for and sat on the shelf for maybe a few years before it was actually released. So did that record get any play in the city?
I wasn't familiar with it. They sat on the record.
Okay.
And, so you mentioned it was released. That's how I found out about it.
Well, you knew it was released too, because you had some copies of it, but like.
Well, I had copies, but it didn't get the airplay during the time that it was expected.
But like, it was also harder to, at that point, like, it was much harder to get local airplay. Like, it was like all major labels had control of anything at that time. Like.
Yeah, the majors was taken over.
Yeah.
On independence, that's
yeah.
true.
Like in the 60s, an independent label could get airplay. But
right.
By then, like, you couldn't break out, and then 12 inches were taken over too, and it was really hard to get airplay by that time. But how long did you end up managing the group?
I managed the group for about maybe 2 years.
Did you go on tour with them ever?
Just locally, just locally here in the city.
Were they popular?
Very popular. The group could. They're very popular. They could put on a show. They could hold an audience.
Did they do like an Earth, Wind, and Fire type thing? Like, what was their sound?
Well, their sound was similar. They could do they do the routine with the horns and so forth. And they was a good looking group on stage. They could handle it. They handled the audience, any audience.
Okay.
They did political events during that time. Commissioner Nellie Jones of Water Reclamation wanted me to do her things, and so there's always something going, particularly when they're running for office and when they want to reward people. So the band was into all that, and so they did some things down in some of your major ballrooms down in the Chicago, Sours on the south side, and they did some of the major clubs, and they did some of the downtown clubs. Can't come to mind now, but they worked. It was popular. They're a self-contained group.
Okay.
And they could perform.
Yeah, I think that was the big change in music in the, like, from in the 70s, like the move away from vocal groups to self-contained bands and
right.
groups. So after that, did you manage or produce any other music?
Well, we did. We picked up a gospel LP by the Mighty Wings called Free and Easy. I don't have a copy, but it was a popular gospel piece, yeah.
Okay. And did that get any, I guess, gospel play?
Yes, it did. Now, that was on Piper Records. I'll be jumping the gun, going a little down the road.
Okay. So what was Piper Records?
Piper Records was a record company that I established. Let me say, Alonzo King, after Motown, he worked for Motown. I think Motown would purchase Allstate Distributors or something of that nature. And he would go to the West Coast after that and work for United Artists or something, come back in Chicago. So I was establishing Piper Records, and he was going to help me to build it. He had the national reputation and so forth. And
so you were starting your own record label.
Own label, right. And what happened with this thing is Alonzo was interested in established artists, and I wanted to deal with the local talent. You know, I wanted to gleam some of the gold that was in the city of Chicago in the streets. And so it didn't work out with Alonzo and I, and I picked up Philip Castleberry, one of the top musicians in the city. He came on board with Piper Records to be vice president.
Okay.
And that's when he produced. Phil would have a pulse on the hand on the music, what was going on around the city, and he would know what was selling and what wouldn't.
Okay.
So he wanted to do a blues with his friend, Tony Reed.
So you released one single on an artist named Tony Reed.
Right.
And you released an album on a gospel group, is that right?
Right.
So that was the extent of your record label.
Right.
So this artist named Tony Reed, you released a song called Where You Been, Baby.
Right, it got airplay.
And then the other side is called The Ray Gun, and I was listening to it, and it sounds like it's making fun of Ronald Reagan. Is that right?
I think it's a political statement. That's what he wanted to do.
Yeah. Should I play that side?
Play Where You Been, Baby.
Seems like the political statement might be more. I'll play Where You Been, Baby.
Yeah.
Okay. And this record, you said it got airplay in Chicago.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so this was the biggest hit that you produced.
Right, Piper Records, right.
Because the other record you produced, even though it was a real nice record, didn't get any airplay.
But the gospel record, it did, yes.
Oh, but the Force of Music record didn't get airplay.
Force of Music, that was on Four Brothers label, okay.
Okay.
Right, so that was on them, but they didn't get it out there until that time.
Okay, well, here is the Tony Reed record, Where You Been, Baby, and we'll talk some more after this.
Okay.
Let me run.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. You're listening to an interview with Matthew Perkins, singer of The Twilights and The Shadows. That last track we just played was one of the records he produced, which got some play in Chicago. That was Tony Reed with Where You Been, Baby. Do you remember what year that came out?
Well, right at the label, I was in the early 80s.
Okay. So have you done any other music stuff since that record came out?
No, I didn't. After that, no.
Okay. So you just decided to get out of the music business?
Right. It's time to get out.
Okay. So first of all, I want to say thanks so much for coming up and telling your story. It was a great interview. I really appreciate it. You had a great story.
Well, thank you for getting me over.
Is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
Well, no, I would just like to say that it's been a nice interview, and it's a lot of memories of the past and the work, the guys that I work with. I hope guys like Kevin would get the kind of recognition that he deserves. Alonzo King and Leonard Allen got a track record, so they're well established. But that's what I would. I'm grateful for the guys that I work with.
Okay.
In the business, it's great people. It was a wonderful time, and we was able to express what was in our hearts and wish the best for everybody. I'd like to thank my daughter-in-law for uncovering these records for me.
Yeah, and I want to thank her, too, for helping hook this up.
Right. She made it all possible.
Okay. Okay, well, thanks again for coming down. And on that note, I'm going to play as a last song, The Other Side, that we were talking about. The original A-side, but what ended up being the B-side of your Calvin and the Twilights record. This is Bashful Boy.